Hello, everyone, and welcome to Masters of Digital Transformation, a podcast from AIM10X dedicated to uncovering the stories behind the world's leading change agents and the most valuable learnings from our community of global innovators. I'm your host, Caleb Masters, and as always, we're here to provide you with the actionable insights from today's greatest thought leaders to guide and accelerate your journeys. AIM10X is a knowledge and networking hub for leaders passionate about digitally transforming enterprises for better decision-making and a better planet. You can learn more by heading to aim10x.o9solutions.com. In today's episode, we'll be joined by Daryl Edwards, the former Chief Operating Officer of Lazy Boy, to discuss embracing the next generation of integrated business planning systems. We'll start by talking about his career journey to becoming the COO of Lazy Boy, before taking a look at why today's consumer expectations have increased complexity for supply chains. We'll also cover how next-generation IBP technology is reshaping the way supply chain operations deliver results. We'll then close out the conversation by learning more about his approach to leading teams through the adoption of these new IBP technologies. But before we get to today's conversation, let's get to know a little more about today's guest, Daryl Edwards. Daryl has over three decades of deep global operations and supply chain experience, delivering significant value within the consumer product industries. He was formerly the Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer at Lazy Boy Incorporated. Daryl currently serves as an Assistant Professor of Practice in the Supply Chain Management Department at the University of Tennessee. Daryl, welcome to Masters of Digital Transformation.
Hey, thanks, Caleb. Great to be here with you today.
Hey, well, I'm looking forward to talking with you about your expertise. Of course, the topic at hand is going to be how to lean in and embrace these emerging IBP technologies. But before we get there, I really want to stop and learn a little about you. It seems like you've just had a really exciting career in supply chain. Maybe you could start just by telling me a little bit about what led you to that world of supply chain.
Yeah, so really good question. And I actually get that frequently, but I guess I could say to you that I got lucky. You know, I actually started out working my way through school. I was working in a manufacturing facility, going to school to be a teacher. Interestingly enough, I started my career at the thought of being a teacher and kind of ending it that way. It's a bit ironic. But nonetheless, I was in the manufacturing space, going to school. And as I began to graduate, I started thinking about what I wanted to do. The things that I love most are working with people, working with teams, traveling, you know, getting a chance to make an impact within a space or an organization. So as I began to think a little more about it, I thought, wow, you know, what I'm doing now is kind of what I really want to do for some time. So I decided to stay with the great game of business and manufacturing. And, you know, hey, 30 plus years later, I was doing what I'm doing and got a chance, you know, to have a really exciting career, one that I enjoyed very much. And now kind of ending my career with the thoughts of where I started in teaching. So that's kind of what led me to supply chain. It's been wonderful and it's been great. And I'm very thankful that I had the chance to play in this game of business and the supply chain space.
So you really have come full circle. You start with teaching, you go get 30 years of business experience, and now you're bringing it back to the next generation, which I think is just a perfect way to sum up the career. But I do want to talk a little bit more about the journey here. Maybe you could elaborate here for me. What would you say is one or two of your biggest challenges that you experienced?
Yeah, interestingly enough, and we'll get there as we have our conversation today, but as I look back in retrospect, probably a couple of my more difficult challenges, and actually one prior to my career at Lazy Boy, was putting in a total enterprise system in our organization. Many years ago, 1998, 1999, we learned our systems weren't Y2K compliant. I'm going way back. It was pretty obvious we were going to have to, you know, revamp our entire, you know, computer central nervous system. So it was a fairly large organization I was working with, and we made a business choice to put that system in, and we did it over a two-year period. We put it in many, many manufacturing plants. We went truly from end to end, you know, from an E1 system, order cash, shop floor tracking, warehouse management, the whole gamut of the suite of services. And, you know, it was back in the early days before we had perfected the process of putting in an E1 system. I mean, you know, globally throughout any business or any space. And needless to say, we struggled mightily with it. At least my team and myself did, and learned a lot from it. But gosh, that was probably one of the more difficult business decisions and business experiences I had.
Well, Y2K, it's so interesting to think about how fast technology has evolved, you know, I guess the 23 years since that massive leap with the internet. Maybe you could lay out in more detail here, what exactly made that such an uncertain period for folks who maybe are a little younger?
Yeah, well, again, I think it's obviously it's been many, many years ago, right? 24, 25 years ago. And I think, you know, total enterprise systems were somewhat in their infancy relative to today. And, you know, the journey of implementing a system like that, so, you know, a huge system that had implications far beyond just, you know, the supply chain space, you know, was a bit new. And we were, a lot of us were novices at that. So it's one of those situations, the classic, I guess, example of you don't know what you don't know until you go through it. And of course, once you've gone through it, you know, you've built a certain skill set and you've built a little mental muscle and can get through, you know, the next one much easier, which I did have the opportunity to go through another full enterprise system with our Lazy Boy company. And that one went much smoother many years ago and much more seamless. Obviously, the learnings that not just we did, my past company, but the learnings with our systems provider and all the technology help we had, you know, were kind of multiplied and made that much better.
Yeah, I think that's just tremendous. And of course, we'll get to it here in a little bit as we're talking more about IBP. But I imagine a lot of the principles you learned overcoming that challenge have applied to your career throughout. I want to shift here and go the other direction. What would you say is perhaps one of your proudest achievements?
I've been asked that question by others. And as I think through that, probably the proudest accomplishment I've had throughout my career, and I hope to continue to do that as I work through the University of Tennessee in the supply chain department, it's just working with great people and building great teams and having, you know, a bit of an influence over or with people's careers. I'd like to think that the teams we've built, we've created some value with the companies that we've worked with. I'd like to think that maybe, just maybe, that working with some of those really smart people and great people and dedicated people that maybe had a little bit of an influence over their career that might help them a little bit. And so that's probably my proudest accomplishments. And I would say, you know, my past life or lives with the companies I work with. But let me say this, I hope to kind of leverage that as we go forward, working with the next generation of supply chain leaders. And those are students at the University of Tennessee, at least those are the people I'm working with most specifically. So I hope the journey continues. But without question, the proudest moments I've had are working with the people in our space. They're just wonderful people that want to do great things and create value for our companies and our customers and consumers.
Absolutely. It's not necessarily the technology, although I'm sure that's an interesting part of the job, but it's the people, the relationships. And again, as you say, creating fulfillment for those people who are growing their careers. Speaking of this generation of supply chain professionals, the expectations and the challenges continue to evolve. They're tremendous, much like your Y2K days, but they're different. So I'd love to get your perspective as someone who's sort of looking back, looking at what has happened in the past versus what we're looking at today in 2023. How have the expectations of consumers and the business challenges of supply chain evolved in the decades, especially when we think about since 2020?
Yeah, well, really good question, and one that we grapple with within the supply chain profession, you know, literally almost every day. I would say that the expectations of customers and consumers have changed remarkably from the standpoint of if consumers and customers are far less patient. The expectations are greater on so many levels, from service, from quality. And of course, our economies continue to be globalized. So from a cost vantage point, so really, really less patient consumers. And we're kind of a victim of our own success within the supply chain space. Over the past multi-decades, I'll say three, at least in my career, you know, we've worked really hard at perfecting our craft. We've gotten better from a service standpoint, from a quality standpoint, from a cost leverage standpoint. We've source the world for the best and the quality products, the best service type products, or the best inputs within the business, and build a pretty strong system and build a fairly robust supply chain. And as a result of that, we're able to deliver really highly on a great value proposition for most of our customers and our consumers throughout the space. With that said, we've also conditioned our customers and our consumers today to expect that and to expect us to be better tomorrow than we are today, and certainly better than we were yesterday. So I would say that consumer expectations are much higher, and the tolerances and the patience of customers and consumers is much less.
Consumers can order packages of any kind, essentially at their fingertips, versus you think even, 10, 12 years ago, smartphones weren't even really a thing. So the ability to click a button and have it delivered within a week at the longest, 1 to 2 days. That's a high bar to clear, I can imagine, especially as you put it in the global economy, which I think, you know, is really going to bring us to the topic I want to discuss more today, which is the next generation of IBP tech, because in order to meet those demands, you've really got to look out and see what is the technology that's going to help us get there in terms of meeting the consumer demand. So I'd love to hear from you, Daryl. I mean, what would you say are some of the key differences between the technologies that you've helped implement earlier in your career versus the emerging IBP platforms that are shaping supply chains today?
Yeah, today's technology is far more sophisticated. And today's technology user is far more savvy and sophisticated as well. But I would say, you know, in the early days, you had a system that was much more disparate, if you will, a singular system, maybe in some type of planning, demand planning, or forecasting modeling that was not connected or integrated at all in many cases with any other system within your business, whether it be financial systems, whether it be shop floor tracking systems, whether it be warehouse management systems, et cetera. So you had this disparate system that was reasonably good at doing exactly what it was designed to do. And so today's technology, far more integrated, far more sophisticated, and it's far more user-friendly. You had to be much more, in my opinion, of an expert in the early days than you do today. And let's be clear, today's users are incredibly smart, probably much smarter from a technology perspective, certainly much more savvy than they were in my past life in the early days. But the systems are designed better. They're much more user-friendly. And most importantly, in my opinion, they're integrated. If you have a really good system with your financial systems, with all your shop floor tracking systems, with your warehouse management systems, with your order to cash systems. So that is one version of the truth, if you will. And when you pull one lever, you know, then it has some implications downstream in all the other areas. Now, if you've done your jobs well, you trained your people well, and everybody understands the product, you have a good product, that's a very positive thing. Because in my opinion, the chances of errors and the chances of mistakes are greatly reduced because you have an integrated system and you see the global impacts within your ecosystem of what one decision makes. If you don't, however, then you still, in my opinion, have the risk of making errors, you know, having planning issues, and ultimately downstream having customer and cost issues.
Why would you say it's so important for these emerging technologies? Why is it so important for all of the data from finance, marketing, sales, and supply chain to live all in one centralized platform? How does that enable the type of efficiencies that you're describing?
You know, I think it's almost essential today to have that. You know, there was a time, you probably still can be in a position of creating competitive advantage if you have a really good system, ideally a great system, and ideally great people and users that manage that system. I think you probably are still in a position where you can create competitive advantage for your firm or your business. In my opinion, there will come a time in the not so distant future where it will no longer be a competitive advantage, but table stakes. But kind of going back to answer your question, I think we kind of go back to the future a bit because we talked about increasing demands of customers, increasing demands of consumers, less patience, the importance of service, cost, and quality being paramount in today's business environment. Having that one version, that one simple system that looks fully integrated throughout the enterprise holistically, in my opinion at least, gives you much, much more visibility and creates the opportunity for you to be a much better firm in all those aspects of service quality and cost.
Yeah. I mean, again, whenever all the data is in one place, it kind of creates more transparency, I can imagine. From your perspective, does this technology shift the way of work from more of a coordination effort to a collaborative effort across functions?
Yeah, absolutely. Unquestionably, that is the fact. You know, we could talk about sales and operation planning. We can talk IBP planning. All those, you know, I guess those terms that we're familiar with and many organizations use at various levels. But yes, what you just described is absolutely an enabler. It minimizes mistakes, increases value for the firm, and you must have, in my opinion, really good data. So you talked about, you know, the importance of data a few moments ago. Yes. I mean, if your data is subpar, then your outcome's at best going to be subpar. As your data matures and increases from an accuracy perspective, then I think the planning information is much better and the outcome and the service is much better as well.
How would you say this emerging technology and having access to this data in one place, how would this maybe remove that gut feeling from decision-making processes and shifting it to more of a data-driven approach to scenario planning?
Yeah, a good question. And I would argue or submit that you really need both. In my opinion, it's clearly data-driven decisions tend to be the default, at least with the teams I've worked with. I mean, we're going to trust the data. We're going to work really hard to make sure we have great inputted data in the system. that we scrubbed a system well, that we have, you know, we understand the output. But typically in parallel, at least the teams I've worked with, we'd like to actually also do a, from a triangulation standpoint, you know, we want to have a conversation with various leaders throughout the supply chain space, whether it be sales and merchandising, whether it be our manufacturing team, whether it be our planning team, and really kind of get a quote gut, what they believe will happen. And then we kind of overlay that with what the scientific information tells us. Generally, you know, they're not too far apart, but all, you know, tiebreaker tends to go to the data because we trust our systems well. But nonetheless, there could be some externalities going on that maybe we had forgotten. So what we like to do then is have a conversation at our IBP or S&OP meeting, depending on, you know, what system you're working through with your business, and have those conversations. Because it's important, I think, at least to triangulate your information between what your gut tells you, using your term, and what the data tells you. I think you need both, and you run those typically in parallel.
Well, you know, when we're thinking about the quickly shifting marketplace that we've already laid out, with especially thinking about consumer expectations, how should today's supply chain leaders view these emerging IBP technologies?
Yeah, well, first of all, as I said a few minutes ago, I think today, if you have a really, ideally, you want both great people, great users, and a great technology system. So typically, you want both, and ideally, you want both. Well, that being said, I think today, if you have both, you still can create competitive advantage for your firm in the marketplace. So asking me how should technology leaders or how should supply chain leaders view these new emerging technologies, I would say embrace them because they can create a source of competitive advantage. There will come a time in the not so distant future, as I said a few moments ago, where it becomes table stakes. If you don't have a great technology system, if you aren't using it effectively with really good data, you're probably not going to not only not create competitive advantage, but become irrelevant in the marketplace. So embrace the technologies. Make sure you have surround yourself with really good people that understand it, you know, that embrace change, that are lifelong learners, that want to try to get better every day.
Do you have any examples that come to mind of when a company that was sort of leaning in and embracing that new technology maybe outpaced the competition who was sticking to a more rigid or maybe a slower system?
Well, let me say this. Let me go back and speak from experience a little bit, if you don't mind. First and foremost, I can tell you that earlier in my career, when we had when I worked for companies that had mostly a demand planning solution, and it was most specifically a demand planning solution, gave us some pretty good information, and we felt pretty savvy about that from the information it gave us and the decisions we were able to make. But please know it was one system, a standalone system, a disparate system, whereas we had to take that data then and then put it in different, in some cases, you know, in modeling where we would put it even in Excel spreadsheets. This is many years ago, you know, and I believe it or not, there are probably still some companies that do this, but they would have to do the same thing with other information that systems were giving us. So we might have 2, 3, 4 disparate systems, and it human error then entered in the equation somewhat, meaning that if we made an error, an input error, if we made a data error, if we didn't get exactly, you know, one table set up correctly, we thought that we ran, you know, the parallel checks and we thought we were doing really well, but we would find out downstream we ordered not enough. We ordered too much. We had obsolescence to deal with, or we had customer outages, you know, to deal with. I can tell you I lived through that many, many, many years ago in my career, whereas the current systems that you buy or you implement that are really, really fully integrated, fairly sophisticated, goes back to that one version of the truth. Take those things into account from a machine learning standpoint, this latest buzz term that we're all talking about from an AI perspective, right? So some of those mistakes, you know, are eliminated for you. And so the odds are of being, you know, creating customer outages or creating ordering too much inventory, tying up your cash and having obsolescence to dispose of at a later date are greatly minimized. So to me, at least having lived through that experience, and that's the best example I can give you, it's the systems today are far more sophisticated, far better. And I firmly, firmly believe in a really good planning system today that's fully integrated versus those of days gone by. So from my vantage point, it was worth the effort and the outcome speaks for themselves because you make fewer mistakes. I'll sometimes tell the kids I'm in class with, you know, it's not often the companies that are winning that do things the best. In some cases, it's the companies that are winning that are making the fewest mistakes. So just by default, you create competitive advantage. By default, you become an industry or market segment leader.
From your perspective, what would you say are some of the key challenges for making the change from maybe a more traditional system to these next generation of IBP technologies?
I would say that those challenges aren't much different than they were 30, 40 years ago when I was starting my career. Typically, I found out that anytime you're looking to change an organization, it's going to be painful. So again, part of those challenges can be helped or aided by surrounding yourself with people that embrace change well, that share information well, that are really good team players, because we want the team to win. We're not necessarily as concerned about ourselves winning as much as we are our teams winning. So surrounding yourself with really good team players, really strong talent from that standpoint, and then culturally, building a culture that embraces change, that is willing to learn and that is willing to grow and understands the seeing into the future just a bit. So those are the components, if you will, I would say, you know, that really help you to be successful as you transition from an S&OP plan or to an IBP type process, or you transition from, you know, what I would say a little bit older technology that many companies are using today into some highly sophisticated technologies that are somewhat contemporary today. It's, in my opinion, a lot of the same things that I dealt with 30 years ago, companies are dealing with today. And it's kind of all about the people, making sure you have the right people around you and you have built the right culture to grow and have a growth mindset.
It's a deeper philosophical challenge rather than one of the technology, because every technology is going to be different and present its own unique set of challenges. But it's having the teams in place, the culture in place that says, hey, we're up for this challenge. Let's make it happen. So even when you're ready to make the change, doing what you're talking about there, fostering a culture, building a team, leading a successful digital transformation is an immense but necessary challenge, which is going to take us into the last part of the conversation today, which is your philosophy on leadership through digital transformation. So I'd love to, again, hear a little bit more about your experience. I mean, what would you say was one of the biggest digital transformations that you've made throughout your career that maybe is most pertinent to this IBP tech?
You know, having led probably a total ERP system, you know, mid-career, if you will, that went reasonably well. Some of that is we obviously learned the lessons from the past, and we're able to not recreate some of those lessons previously, which was good. Secondly, I think the technology has evolved, and I think it's much more user-friendly today, or at least when my mid-career transition occurred, than it was in the past. So we understand it better. We have become tech-savvy as a culture, right? As a people. I mean, we're ordering things online from the convenience of our home. We're able to navigate technologies at our local drive-through restaurant or at our banks, et cetera. It's become part of our daily lives. So we become, as a people, much more user-friendly and tech-savvy, you know, just from that perspective. So all those things combining, I think, have helped at least me, and I think has helped others, you know, as they've gone through digital transformations. And I think, you know, let's be clear, the most is yet to come. We haven't quite gotten to the other side yet, right? We've matured, we've learned, you know, we've gotten better as time has gone on. But, you know, I'll go back to, in my opinion, the fundamental foundational, I guess you could say, skill sets required. First and foremost is ideally you want to have the best technology and the most sophisticated technology that's the most user-friendly in the market. You want that. Once you get beyond that, it's just about the people. You know, have you built a culture of a growth mindset that are lifelong learners that embrace change willingly? You know, to be naive here, change is hard. But you change is much easier and the probability of success is much higher if you have surrounded yourself with people that have those attributes and characteristics I just described. Now, we have to have threshold skills. Let's be clear. I don't mean to say that, you know, you hire people that have great attitudes that want to change for change's sake. I'm talking about whatever their domain is and their functional space, they must have a certain level of skill set, and we'll call those a minimum threshold skills. But beyond that, I really want people that have a certain attitude that aligns with our company's values and our company culture. And this, those things I just described, being a lifelong learner, embracing change and having growth mindset. We have those things with threshold skills. We support one another. We'll get to the other side and we will be successful.
Once you've found the right people as a leader, how do you approach fostering that agile mindset and say, hey, here's the challenge at hand? How do you rally the troops and really ingrain that as part of the working philosophy of the team or the company?
Yeah, so I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all. I think it depends on the leader and depends on the culture and the company you're working through. But I can tell you what worked for me. One is having the ability, again, to surround myself. I always said, hey, I want to surround myself with people that are smarter than I am, which in my case was a low bar, wasn't very hard to do, right? But beyond that, it was about taking really smart people you know, that had strong skill in different areas in many cases, then you know, we tried really hard to avoid groupthink. We tried to really surround ourselves from a team standpoint with people with highly different skills and highly different personalities. And we thought the diversity helped a lot there. And then having the ability to kind of check your ego in the room, to be a servant leader. And, you know, we started every meeting with how can we serve you? How can we, you know, how do we serve you better? And secondly, listening and really listening to the comments and the advice given, and having the ability to have difficult conversations and spirited debate. But at the end of the day, everybody had their conversation, everybody had their input, and then collectively as a group making the best decision we thought, regardless of whose suggestion it was, regardless of if it hurts my ego a little bit. If we have, you know, that team dynamic, I think, at least for me, it increased the probability of success on these large projects.
Absolutely. And I mean, again, whenever you're fostering that sort of open discussion, I imagine people feel comfortable bringing their ideas forward, even if their ideas aren't the one that are ultimately selected. The fact that they're in a space where they can do that says, hey, I didn't get this one. Let me come back with a different one better. With that said, I one other component I want to hit on before we wrap up today, Daryl, is obviously when you're adopting these new systems, you're going and seeking out partners more than likely to help you implement and share their technology with you. So from your perspective, why should supply chain leaders lean into the collaboration with these sorts of IBP partnerships or any of these partners who are here to enable the technology and assist with that process?
Well, you're seeking out a partner to begin with because that's a technology or a skill or a function or a system you don't currently have, or you think yours is inferior to what's in the marketplace if you're out there seeking that partner out. So first and foremost, you know, it's like the analogy I would use is like going to a doctor or an accountant or any other profession is you're hiring someone to give you some expert advice in their field or domain. So it's probably smart to listen to those. So first and foremost, those partners that you're seeking out have a lot of experience in this particular domain and have experienced a lot of implementations and can help you be successful. So first and foremost, that's one of the reasons I'm seeking that person or that partner out. Secondly, I think it's important that we go back to this conversation of trust and transparency. You know, the more open, the more, obviously there's certain things you can't share because of proprietary reasons or because of, information that may or may not be public depending on the type of company you are. I get all that. But what you are available to share and what's available to share with your partner, I think it's incredibly important that you're that transparent because they're only going to help you as much and the data is only going to be as good and the system is only going to be as good and the implementation is only going to be as good as the information they have. So the more information they have, the more accurate information they have, even if it's, you know, a little bit embarrassing to say, hey, we're only this good, or hey, we have, you know, this issue within our system, or hey, we have a malfunction here, you know, be open and transparent about it, because once you've done that, then you have a chance to get better and you have a chance to get remarkably better. So seek out a partner that's really sophisticated, that's intelligent in their space. Be transparent and forthcoming with that partner. Make sure that your goals are aligned. Let's be clear, you know, Caleb, that if I'm talking to you about a system, I want to make sure that you understand what my goals are. No matter how lofty or how sophisticated, how big or how small, you can't hit a target you can't see. So it's important that we share transparently what those goals are and those timelines are. And so if we're both transparent and candid with each other, then we have a chance of hitting that goal. Or, you know, it's going to become obvious, hey, maybe you aren't the right partner. And in many cases, those partners will admit that, hey, what you're looking for, this is not something we do. But in many cases, that's not the case. It's just a matter of, you know, if there is a failure downstream or the success is not nearly as quickly as we'd like, it's because in some cases, we haven't selected the right partner that aligns with our core values, or we haven't been transparent where we could have been with data, information, and goals.
Yeah, I think that's well said. It all goes back to trust. Daryl, as we wind down, I want to close out just by getting a little bit more on your perspective. What parting words of wisdom would you share with our listeners who maybe are in the process of adopting a new technology or at least shopping around or trying to figure out what's the best way to approach it?
Yeah, Caleb, I'll probably draw on some of our conversation a few minutes ago. You know, first and foremost, surround yourself with really smart people. Surround yourself with people that align with the company culture and the core values of your company. You know, in other words, that there's no misalignment there with what the ultimate goals are. Surround yourself with lifelong learners. Ask really complex and high and sophisticated questions if you want good answers. You know, work hard, you know, but play hard too, because, you know, you're going to have to put a lot of hours in. So make sure you have a little fun at work. And then when you set up milestones throughout your transformations. When we hit this milestone, be sure to celebrate, because it's important that your team knows that they're winning along the journey. The journey sometimes can be long, can be difficult, can require a lot of work and hours. And so don't wait to the end to pat folks on the back, metaphorically, or, you know, and don't wait to the end to celebrate and say thank you. Do it along the way as you achieve these milestones, because you surely will be successful. So I think you do those things well, and you're gonna be happy with the results on the other side.
Darrell Edwards, thank you so much for joining us on Masters of Digital Transformation today.
Thank you, Caleb. It's been my pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to today's episode featuring Darrell Edwards, the former COO of Lazy Boy. If you enjoyed today's conversation and want to learn more about the world's leading change agents, you can join our community of global innovators by heading to aim10x.09solutions.com and signing up today. AIM10X is a knowledge and networking hub for leaders passionate about digitally transforming enterprises for better decision-making and a better planet. To keep up with more episodes of Masters of Digital Transformation, please leave us a rating and a review on your preferred podcast app, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you go for your podcasts. And make sure to give us a follow and subscribe. You can learn more about the activities and learning opportunities available through the AIM10X Innovators Network by following AIM10X on LinkedIn. To close us out today, Darrell's thoughts about the consumer expectations reminded me of this quote from Steve Jobs. You've got to start with the customer experience and work backwards toward the technology, not the other way around. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm excited to announce that in our next episode, I'll be speaking with Rhonda Vettieri, a global STEM ambassador and seasoned technology executive with companies like Estee Lauder and Herbalife, to discuss how CIOs and CTOs should be transforming their roles from order takers to strategic business partners. This is one you won't want to miss.